Every successful business, big or small, depends on the skills and motivation of their workforce. And in today's highly competitive world of business, every employee counts. And that's why we're here, to help you find better. Welcome to the Monster Hiring Podcast, featuring expert advice on how to hire, lead, and motivate your workforce while you keep yourself motivated. I'm Connie Blazek, editor of the Monster Resource Center. Thanks for tuning in. I invite you to visit our library of recruiting resources at hiring.monster.com. In this Monster podcast, we'll discuss leadership, specifically the power of authentic leadership, with best-selling author Bill George. Authentic leaders are redefining today's top companies. The good news is that anyone can become an authentic leader. Whether you're a CEO, a manager, small business owner, or someone who is ready to simply step up. Stay tuned. Shortly after its publication in 2007, Bill George's renowned book, True North, became a go-to guide on leadership at a time of financial turmoil and misuse of power. Today, a newly expanded and updated edition of the book comes at a time when leaders face increasing pressures and when public trust in leadership is at one of its worst lows. Here to talk about leadership and about the second edition of the book called Discover Your True North is Bill George, a senior fellow at the Harvard Business School and former chairman and CEO of Medtronic. Under his leadership, the company's market capitalization grew from $1.1 billion to $60 billion. Bill George, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So are today's leaders facing significantly different challenges than they did a decade ago when you first wrote True North?
Definitely, I think they are. Back in, in the 90s and early 2000s, leaders were revered. And today, I think everyone is somewhat skeptical and cynical about our leaders. And that's because so many leaders in my generation dropped the ball and caused great harm, first in the corporate governance crisis of the early 2000s and then in the financial crisis of 2008 and 2009. And I'm convinced that the root cause of those problems was not corporate governance or credit default swaps or subprime mortgages, but failed leadership. But I am very hopeful about this generation of leaders. I think we're seeing very, very positive signs that they have learned a lesson from their predecessors. And we have an outstanding group of new leaders coming up from the CEOs who have been elected in the last 7-8 years to the young leaders, the millennials, taking on much more responsibility these days.
It is a world where the millennials are already the dominant generation in the workforce. So the transition is happening very quickly. So I agree, it's a very exciting time. The new edition of the book includes 47 new interviews. Can you talk about some of the people that you've just mentioned, these new leaders?
Well, in this new set, we try to get a much more global set of leaders, much more diverse, and spread across all ages ranges, as was the first group of 125. But, you know, people like, give you an example, Indra Nooyi, who is the chairman and CEO of PepsiCo. Amazing, remarkable leader, born in India, educated in India, came to the United States, complete her education, eventually became head of PepsiCo, took on a fierce challenge from the outside world because she said that she wanted to create healthy foods and beverages in addition to PepsiCo's traditional line. And the stock market was critical. Various consumers were critical. She even endured a withering challenge from an activist. But she stayed the course throughout this period. And now all the things she predicted are coming to pass, that we are much more conscious about what we eat, how we eat. I think she's an example of someone that has vision, tenacity, and courage, and is a true global leader of a global firm. So she's one person. Another person I found really interesting in the interviews is Ken Frazier. Ken is now the head of Merck, the world's leading pharmaceutical research company, 58 years old. But the interesting thing about Ken is his grandfather was a slave. He was born before 1863. So you can see a lot of years have transpired. And I wanted to ask Ken, I said, Ken's African-American. And I said, do you ever get discriminated against? He said, oh, of course, Bill, all the time. But he said, if I get upset about that, I'm giving you the power. And maybe that's your problem. And so I'm not going to respond to that. I'm just going to walk past it. and do what I have to, because we all, in one way or another, have had discrimination we've had to face.
It's so much of the book was really an eye-opener to me, in the sense that true, authentic leadership, it seems, is defined by a capacity to look inward, understand your life story, understand what you call your crucibles, your challenges, and then figure out what are the values that come out of that. And I think that's what's really emerging with a lot of these leaders that you're talking about.
That's the big change. I think back in the 20th century, we thought leadership was something you want from the outside in. We could patch it on with improving your leadership style, how you dress, how you appeared, how you communicated outwardly. Honestly, I think those things are the outward manifestation of who you are as a person. But a lot of times we don't understand ourselves. We don't know what really motivates us. And that takes a lot of deep exploration into who you are and being proud of where you came from, even if you came from abject poverty or had a troubled illness as a child, or came from a family that had difficulties or made big mistakes. And I think knowing who you are then enables us to be the person we were meant to be, not to try to emulate some other leader, but to be ourselves, that unique person. And the toughest part is to stay on course of our true north, not lose sight of what we're called to do.
Can you talk about that term, true north, because it has such an enigmatic quality, but can you explain what you're really talking about?
Well, it came out of some of our early interviews way back in 2005 and 2006, when people said, in difficult situations, I just follow my inner moral compass, or I follow my compass, or I follow my true north. And said, boy, that's a phrase that can resonate with people, even people who don't see themselves as leaders, because we want to reach people who don't self-identify as leaders, but have the capacity to make a difference through their leadership. And so we used that, and actually it's had a lot of resonance with people, much more than I ever expected. And by the way, I think no two people have the same true north. It's unique for each of us, and we have to discover. The whole process of this book is, how do we discover what our true north is, and then how do we stay on course?
Are there instances where people do the work of finding or understanding what is their true north, and then a realization that this position that I'm in isn't really aligning with what is my true north?
Absolutely. A lot of us face that at one point in time. I faced that personally, that in the middle of my career, I thought I was en route to being CEO of Honeywell, and I may have been. But I was getting pulled off course. I was chasing the CEO title more than being the value-centered leader I always felt called to be. And so it became all of a sudden more about making the numbers and making the right impression and how you dressed and trying to get I'm grabbing for the brass ring of being CEO, and that's really not what's important. It was really more, what are you going to do? What are you going to do with your life, and what kind of leader are you going to be? But that brought me ultimately to Medtronic's doorstep. I had turned the job down 3 times before, but that was really the place I was meant to be. But I was blinded by the big company idea and not seeing, hey, this is where I should be with the kind of mission I can really resonate with.
Mm. There's a wonderful expression that I think is in the business vernacular now, which is vulnerability is power. And, it seems like that comes out of self-realization when you say, what I really should be doing is taking this other choice, or making this other choice, which might not seem like the big power play, but it's that vulnerability of understanding what is the right thing to do.
This is a whole new idea. For many years of my life, I was afraid to be vulnerable for fear you'd think I was weak. And I think that was the norm when I was coming up. This is a whole new idea. I got the idea originally from a man named John Hope Bryant. John is one of the most interesting people I interviewed. John is actually a homeless man. And he came to my class at Harvard, believe it or not, a class for young global leaders of the World Economic Forum. And he was selected to this because of the work he did with the poor and creating financial literacy, and done some remarkable work, raised $500 million to help the poor overcome financial illiteracy. And John has used this phrase, and he wrote a book, and I've adopted it and used it in the classroom, and found it had great resonance with people. If they could be willing to be vulnerable, they felt so much more comfortable because they could be who they were. And so his philosophy, in which I've now adopted, is that when I show my vulnerabilities to you, I said that, you know, I was getting off track at Honeywell or I was losing my way, then I have the power. If I don't open up, then you have the power because you can see those things about me I can't see. And I'm trying to fake it to make it, so to speak. I'm trying to be something different than I am. And so I think it is a new idea and one of the, I think, most powerful ideas in the book.
And does that kind of help address this whole issue of fear of failure, which, of course, drives many of us sometimes to do very strange things, sometimes to do powerful things. But does the notion of vulnerability as power help address that sense of fear as failure?
It sure does, because a lot of people gear their whole careers not to ever fail. And what I try to coach people to believe that you can't go through life without failing. You're going to fail. And sometimes it'll hit you from maybe it'd be unfair. You know, good things don't always happen to good people. But you are at some point going to fail. So if you can own that, in fact, in Silicon Valley now with entrepreneurs, it almost become a badge of honor as you failed once so you can be successful the next time.
Mm. Do these leaders, do they view their workforce and their position in the organization in a significantly different way than, say, someone who was a CEO 20, 30 years ago?
I think they definitely do. Before, we were so hierarchical and everything was honestly very bureaucratic. We're trying to manage the whole company by systems and procedures. And now with humanity, today's great leaders are really engaged with the people that work for them. And if you think about it, what's your impression come from when you go to a hospital, when you go to a hotel, go to a restaurant? It's the first line people. You don't see the CEO of that hospital or of that hotel or that restaurant or the owner. You see the first line people. And I think that's a big, big change from the past when they're spending most of the time sitting inside having meetings about customers, not getting out and being with them. So great leaders like Howard Schultz go to 24 Starbucks stores a week just to hang out and see what's going on and watch the relationship between the barista and the customers because he knows that's the essence of what Starbucks does.
You mentioned Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz. I was really touched by the realization that he had after many years of having a kind of tense relationship with his father. After his father's death, Howard Schultz recognized or realized that his father had never had the opportunity to really find meaning in his work or find meaningful work. And it seemed to me that that then impacted Howard to go on and create a company culture that was really about helping workers find meaningful work.
Exactly. And I think Howard has done a brilliant job of that. But see, he's living his life story. There is a congruence for him of what it was like to grow up in the Bayview housing projects where he had nothing and there was a lot of crime and drugs and poverty around him and seeing his father lose 30 jobs saying, I don't want that. I want to create great jobs for people. And people at Starbucks who work there really resonate with that. And as a customer, you feel that. And the other thing about Howard, he grew up in a very diverse environment. So diversity to him is a way of life. I'm advocating in the book that we celebrate diversity, not tolerate it. And that so he would, there are people from all nationalities, all races, all religions, sexual preference, genders, obviously. And he wants everyone who comes into Starbucks to feel welcome. But see, he had to reframe his view of his father. He thought his father was a failure. And so he was running from failure like it was going to happen to him any day. And he reframed this around a dream of creating a company that his father would be proud to work with, where everyone, while a lot of companies right now are taking health care away from employees, Howard's ensuring everyone gets it, even part-time workers, which is pretty amazing because, you know, their people are paid above the minimum wage, but they're not paid all that much. It's not a, you know, it's not a research environment. So that he has made this commitment to people because of his view of seeing his father lose his health care insurance. But I think that's more indicative of the CEOs today of the issues they're taking on. I mentioned Indra Nooyi and the health issue. There are a number of CEOs taking on really important issues today that are close to their fields. They aren't necessarily, it's not through their foundations. They personally are committed to do it. One of the people I feature in the book is Paul Polman, the CEO of Unilever. Paul is an amazing leader, and he realizes what a global company Unilever is. They have 60% of their business comes from emerging markets, and he's taken on the issue of sustainability. and he believes environmental sustainability and that every product that Unilever makes should be sustainable, and he's phased out things like palm oil, and he's working with growers of tea and other products to ensure that they're sustainable. And so I think that's really noble, and he's made that the mission for the whole company. Here you got 200,000 people aligned around that proposition.
It's amazing what global leaders are doing. I'm wondering, too, about applying these principles and this journey that you talk about in the book to becoming an authentic leader, how that also applies to leaders of smaller companies or companies that are growing, startups. I mean, there's a lot of energy in that space, and I would think it's just as applicable for those people as well.
Absolutely. In fact, every company today should be clear about its mission. And it's got to be more than just making money for the owners or the short-term shareholders. I'm willing to work for you 60, 70 hours a week and give you everything I got, my heart and my soul, if you have a purpose. But if it's just about making money for you because you're the owner of the company, I'm not interested in that. Why would I do that? You know, I'm going to spend all my time in my life working for someone, you know, to make them money. You know, I actually want to feel like my life has more meaning than that. And there's not much meaning in making money for you.
Right. And it's a sense of being part of the ideas, right? You know, being allowed to come to the table to express your ideas, to have them be considered, to have dialogue across the organization.
Absolutely. And you have every right and need to do that. And good decisions are made collectively by people with diverse life experiences. If we just have someone at the top making all the decisions, like a command general, it's not going to work. But today, the millennials are not going to work in an environment that's like that. It's highly bureaucratic, highly structured, or just about the owners. They want to feel like they're making a difference. That's the exciting thing about this millennial generation, is they want to make a difference. And I say, God bless them. Give them a chance, and give them a chance now. Open up the door. Somebody gave me a chance when I was 27 years old to start the consumer microwave oven business back in 1970 when there was none. And if I hadn't had that opportunity, I would never have to make mistakes and to, you know, we did extremely well, but we made a lot of mistakes along the way. We learned from that. And if you don't do that, if you just stand in line till you're 40, you'll be past the point where you can really learn about yourself as a leader and have a chance to rub up against the world and experience different ways, you know, types of leadership and how leaders lead.
And that leads into this idea that's in the book, which I thought was very powerful, the importance of mentoring, both leaders who mentor others in the organization as well as the leaders being mentored themselves or having a mentor. Can you talk about how some of those ideas are playing out?
All relationships are a two-way street, including mentoring. So it's got to be two-way. So I'll give you an example. Just this morning, I had breakfast with a 20-year-old college junior who's been working with me doing writing about the millennials this summer and working with me in writing some articles on the book, helping me, supporting me in that. I view it as I'm learning from him about how millennials think, what he's passionate about, not just what he is, but the whole generation. And by having that kind of two-way relationship, I can grow and he can grow. He can learn from me and I can learn from him. And I think that's really what mentoring's all about. So I recommend to senior people now, CEOs, you know, you need to have some young mentees. I always had that when I was at Medtronic. I had young mentees, units of running partners, but I couldn't understand how the company felt to somebody new coming in. So I had them as mentees, and I would just ask them, what's it like to be a new employee or a younger employee of this company? Because, you know, I wanted to see it through rose-colored glasses as I saw it, but that wasn't necessarily the way they saw it. So this became very, very important to me to do a good job at trying to lead an organization of 30,000 people.
It requires a certain level of humility, I think, to understand that every interaction in your organization could provide a little tidbit or maybe a really big piece of information that's going to be very helpful.
Yeah. And so the biggest challenge, leaders of all organizations, how do you know what's going on? And the bigger they are, the harder that task becomes. It's hard to know what's going on inside your organization unless you're out mingling with the people and working closely with them. And so that's why I advocate engaged style of leadership where you're out with the people all the time. In the innovation labs, on the production floor, out in the field, visiting your sites if you have a retail business. I gowned up and saw 700 procedures in the time I was head of Medtronic. actually put on the greens and go in with the doctors and work some of the best doctors in the world, just learning what they did. I wasn't selling them anything. I was just learning how they practice their craft. It was a great learning experience for me.
Mm. Would we be going too far to recommend that employers themselves obviously work to find their true north and encourage all of their employees, give them the means to find their true north, regardless of their role in the organization or their level in the organization?
Yes, I think organizations need to have a true north. I mean, look what Google has done and their recent reorganization as Alphabet, or what Mark Zuckerberg, these are both young millennials running these companies, Mark Zuckerberg has brought to Facebook with a real sense of what they're trying to do. And okay, he's dealing with complex privacy issues, but today you're in a very complex society and you have to deal with these social issues as they come to you. And maybe you haven't anticipated everything, so you have to make adjustments. So, but I think these companies have a clear sense of true north, just like Ken Frazier has brought to Merck. They've gotten away from trying to create breakthrough drugs to save lives. That kind of leadership, or as I mentioned, Indra Nooyi for healthy foods or Paul Polman for sustainability, that kind of leadership is what everyone wants to be associated with today, I believe.
Just to give people a means of thinking about this, and then they can go out and get the book, but how do you start? How do you start this discovery process? How do you start this journey to becoming an authentic leader?
Great question. Everything starts with your life story. So we go out and we explore who we are as people. I think you have to do two things. You have to write it down and really think through, who are the people that influence me? What are the experience I have? And then get into the difficult times. I think you can't ignore the difficult times, the crucibles, as I call them. And then as you're telling your story to another person, actually you reframe it. You asked earlier about Howard Schultz reframing his image of his father, not as a failure, but as a guy who never had a shot, never had a chance. So instead of being so hard on his father as he was earlier in life, he reframed it as his father was in a society that didn't give people a chance. So Howard wanted to change that. So his passion came out of that. And we find your passion comes out of your life story. Maybe you've been discriminated against and you want to take that issue on. Or maybe you were not given the opportunities. You want to open up ties to other people. Or maybe you didn't have the educational opportunities and you want to do that to your work. Or the career opportunities to do something at a young age. And so as you explore you start by exploring your life story and then sharing it with somebody else.
And it goes back to that wonderful line in the book that just really stood out to me. And that is, the hardest person you will ever have to lead is yourself.
Yes, I created that phrase, and at first people thought, this is odd, what are you talking about? Leadership is not about leading yourself, it's about leading other people. Well, you can't be a good leader of other people, honestly, unless you're a good human being. And leading ourselves, in my study of leaders, and since I came to Harvard Business School 12 years ago, what I found in studying hundreds and hundreds of leaders is the ones who failed all fail to lead themselves. It wasn't that they weren't smart enough. It wasn't they couldn't lead other people. It's that they got off track. They lost sight of their true north, and they got their ego tied up. They couldn't deal with the possibility of failure, all the things we've been talking about. And we found that you had to do that first. Then you could become a great leader of other people, because people can't ask more of you than who you are as a person. They can't ask you to be a facade or something else, and nor should you let them. And so you just have to be who you are, but that comes from the capacity to lead yourself.
Bill George, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Bill George's most recent book is Discover Your True North, an expanded and updated edition of his 2007 bestseller, True North. He's also the author of the best-selling book, Authentic Leadership. He's the senior fellow at the Harvard Business School and former chairman and CEO of Medtronic. We invite you to read an excerpt from Bill George's book, Discover Your True North. Go to the Monster Resource Center at hiring.monster.com. That's hiring.monster.com, and click on the Resource Center tab when you get there. Our podcast page includes a transcript of our conversation with Bill George and other articles on the art of leadership, as well as a special offer for Monster Podcast listeners who are looking to find better. I'm Connie Blazek. Thank you for listening.